Russia pushing to destroy Ukrainian military infrastructure, disabling a major airbase on day 11 of the conflict. Ukraine calls NATO weak over rejecting a no-fly zone to confront Russia as pushes for more U.S. support. And a deadly confrontation with the occupied Al-Quds, a Palestinian teen is killed and an Israeli soldier is wounded in an attack. It's good to have you with us. Now, Russia is saying it's disabled a military airbase in western Ukraine with long-range, high-precision weapons. The defense ministry says that this is part of the strikes meant to destroy Ukraine's military infrastructure. Its forces have also disabled a Ukrainian-controlled S-300 missile system and hit 10 aircraft and choppers. Meantime, the evacuation of some 400,000 civilians is to resume in the southeastern city of Mariupol under a temporary ceasefire that will last until 9 p.m. local time. An earlier truce was broken Saturday, with each side blaming the other for the situation. It's the 11th day of the military campaign, and Russia is inching closer to the capital, Kiev, with President Putin warning against any attempt to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine.
Any country that seeks to impose a no-fly zone will be considered by us to have entered the conflict. Imposing a no-fly zone will have colossal and catastrophic consequences, not only for Europe, but also the whole world.
Putin says Western sanctions are akin to a declaration of war. He stressed his country aims to defend the Russian-speaking communities in Ukraine by demilitarizing and denazifying the country. Meantime, Ukrainian lead negotiator says the talks between Moscow and Kiev to seek a way to end the conflict will resume on Monday. The last round of peace talks failed to yield any result. According to the United Nations, the conflict that began on February 24th has claimed 350 civilian lives and wounded 700 people in Ukraine. The UN Refugee Agency has reported the departure of 1.3 million refugees from Ukraine so far. Now, Ukrainian president is asking for more extensive support from the United States in the conflict with Russia. Volodymyr Zelensky says that in his phone conversation with U.S. President Joe Biden, he requested more financial aid and the continuation of sanctions on Russia. According to the White House, Biden has said that he is working to raise the costs on Moscow. Ukraine's foreign minister has also asked his American counterpart for supplies of fighter jets and air defense systems. Dmytro Kuleba is critical of NATO for refusing to impose a no-fly zone, calling it a sign of weakness. Western governments continue to flood Ukraine with arms and funds, with Washington so far promising $10 billion in aid and $350 million in weapons sales. Now, moving on with our news broadcast, France and the UK are engaged in a new bitter dispute over how to deal with the influx of refugees fleeing the conflict in Ukraine. Paris has now complained that British officials are treating refugees at the French port of Calais in an unsuitable and inhuman way. French Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin says the 400 Ukrainians fleeing war have come to the port of Calais in the hopes of joining their relatives already residing in Britain. But the UK has turned them away, telling them they need to go to Paris or Brussels to get visas. Now, according to Darmanin, the UK must provide consular services on the spot in Calais, just like it's doing on Ukraine's border in Poland. France and the UK have been at odds over post-Brexit fishing rights, and things took a turn for the worse following the drowning of 27 migrants in the English Channel in November last year. Then we had each side accusing the other of inadequate response. A rally against the Russian-Ukrainian war has been held in Rome. Tens of thousands of people calling for an end to the conflict that could lead to the displacement and suffering of people on a large scale. We have a report.
On Saturday, over 30,000 people staged a rally in the Italian capital against the escalating war between Russia and Ukraine. The initiative was called by trade unions, leftist groups and pro-peace movements as fighting rages on in a number of Ukrainian cities and talks between Kyiv and Moscow have produced very little so far. The protesters chanted slogans for peace and the end of all wars, urging the United Nations to do more to mediate between Russia, Ukraine and all parties related to the ongoing Ukrainian crisis.
Rather than investing in social welfare, labor, health and education systems, in Western countries have been wasting resources on armaments. Today, Russia must be held accountable for the Ukraine crisis.
Anti-war rallies have been held across Italy over the past days. Most of the demonstrations held in Rome, Palermo, Milan and other Italian cities have been in solidarity with Ukraine.
People at the rally have mixed feelings over who should be held accountable for the war in Ukraine. The majority believe there is a shared responsibility upon all the parts involved, from the US and the NATO, to Russia's president, Vladimir Putin.
Ma sicuramente non dobbiamo dimenticarci.
It goes without saying that history must not be forgotten. NATO's expansion towards Eastern Europe is central to this crisis. The parties involved must continue to explore all diplomatic tools in order to have Putin's troops withdrawn. However, let's not forget why the conflict began in the first place.
In Italy, the most recent government update places the number of Ukrainian refugees who have entered the country since the start of the war at about 9,000. According to Ukrainian-Italian associations, up to 800,000-900,000 refugees may reach Italy in the coming weeks. Max Civili, Rome.
France now has a set list of candidates for the presidential election next month, and many voters hoping serious domestic issues will finally begin to be discussed. Now, Islamophobia and war hysteria have dominated discussions so far, instead of record levels of inflation, apathy, and political repression. From Paris, Rami Mazahedi reports.
Waiting until the final moment to register in order to skirt laws on equal media time for election candidates, French President Emmanuel Macron confirmed he will run for re-election. The slate of candidates is now finalized. Macron began his term hailed as the new leader of the free world, but his once-in-a-century repression of the Yellow Vests has many calling him a liberal strongman who enforces rubber bullet liberalism. Macron is leading in the first round and has a comfortable lead in the second round of roughly 60-40 over far-right mainstay Marine Le Pen. The Russian special military operation in Ukraine has given Macron a 5-point increase in the past 2 weeks, and the ending of extremely strict coronavirus rules in mid-March may lead to another increase. However, Western polling agencies have become severely discredited in recent years, with France's largest newspaper refusing to run any of them.
I don't believe the polls, which are all conducted by private companies who deliver the results, which they are paid to deliver. Macron's track record is catastrophic. He's achieved nothing for the average person. It's truly the dictatorship of a total capitalist. France has really reached the bottom.
The campaign hasn't been centered around the incumbent's record, but openly Islamophobic ideas. Despite running third or fourth in the polls, far-right convicted racist Eric Zemmour has been allowed by media executives to set the agenda.
The rise of the extreme right is totally unsupportable, and we have no choice but to confront these ideas of fascism, racism, and xenophobia. France must stand up as one and say no. I'm sure that France will, and I'm sure no far-right candidates will reach the second round.
The resulting lack of serious issues appears certain to produce record abstention. Just 52% of France is interested in the vote this year, compared to 78% for the previous election.
3 weeks ago, all of the leading candidates were openly pro-Russian, but France's media has been swept by a wave of war hysteria, which usually benefits the incumbent. However, for many, at least that has pushed Islamophobia off the agenda, at least for now. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Another stubborn attack in the occupied West Bank city of Al Quds. The incident came to an end with Israeli forces killing a teenage Palestinian. Hamas has reacted by heaping praise on what it called the heroic stepping operation, saying it's a natural response to the crimes of the Israeli occupiers. Now we've talked to our West Bank correspondent for an update.
Another Palestinian teen was shot dead by the Israeli forces in Al-Quds, in the occupied city of Al-Quds. What happened, according to the Israeli military, that almost a 19-year-old Palestinian, originally from the city of Al-Quds, just before Al-Fajr prayers, arrived at Bab Hutta, north Al-Aqsa Mosque, and tried to stab Israeli soldiers there. Immediately, Israeli officers opened fire, wounding him, and they left him bleeding until he passed away. First, the Israeli military statement claimed that two Israeli officers were wounded during this operation as the Palestinian youth stabbed them. However, later, they said that one Israeli officer was wounded by the stabber and the other was wounded from the shooting by the Israeli officers. However, Palestinian witnesses there said they were heading to the Al-Aqsa Mosque for the Fajr prayers, and they heard Israeli soldiers screaming at the Bab Hutta. They rushed there. They found a Palestinian youth bleeding and the Israeli forces not allowing anyone to rescue his life.
Western states have imposed what they call unprecedented sanctions on Russia over its ongoing military operation in Ukraine. The sanctions hit Russian banks and financial institutions as well as energy sector. The West at the same time has refused to send troops to Ukraine or declare the country's airspace a no-fly zone. Now, who's likely to come out on top in this war?
Russia's decision to attack Ukraine has ushered in a new era in its relations with the West. The United States and its allies are supplying Ukraine with arms and providing it with intelligence to fight Russian troops. But they are not directly involved in the clashes.
The only way to actually implement something like a no-fly zone is to send NATO planes into Ukrainian airspace and to shoot down Russian planes. And that could lead to a full-fledged war. In Europe, President Biden has been clear that we are not going to get into a war with Russia.
Of course the U.S. doesn't want that, because if a war breaks out between the West and Russia, the concept of mutually assured destruction will be on the table, meaning that the two sides, both nuclear powers, will be risking total annihilation. To avoid the doomsday scenario, the West has resorted to another form of warfare, the economic type. The United States and many of its allies have announced unprecedented sanctions on Russia, targeting its financial, banking, and oil and gas sector, among others. These include sanctions on Russia's central bank, exclusion of several Russian banks from the SWIFT payment system, and a ban on Russian banks and companies' access to Western capital markets. In other words, Russia's engagement in dollar-denominated business will be severely affected. But let's not forget that for every action, there will be an opposite reaction.
Look, the dominance of the dollar has afforded America great global power, but it is now under real threat as never before, as Russia, China, and others economically challenge the US. Many are now seeking to ditch their dependence on the dollar, as Washington has continued to abuse its status as issuer of the world's reserve currency for decades, really, since after the Second World War.
Russia has already been working on plans to reduce its dependence on the trade in the dollar.
The 2014 move by the Crimean Peninsula to rejoin Russia and subsequent independence calls in eastern Ukraine triggered tensions between Russia and the West. A number of countries, among them the U.S., imposed sanctions on Moscow, including those hitting Russian economy. Now, in response, Russia considered plans to stop using the U.S. dollar in its trades, a move also joined by China later on. Now, will that measure be successful, and how will it affect the global economy?
Russian President Vladimir Putin visited Beijing for the opening of the Winter Olympic Games in China in early February and met with his Chinese counterpart. It was President Xi Jinping's first face-to-face meeting with another head of state in nearly 2 years, which highlights the importance of the visit. The two leaders discussed the need to broaden bilateral trade in national currencies due to the unpredictability surrounding the use of the dollar. Russia has been pursuing the policy for a while. Back in April 2021, the share of Russian exports in dollars fell below 50% for the first time. Moscow's trade with Beijing is mostly responsible for the dive. There's room for improvement, though, as the majority of trade between China and Russia is done in euro, with just over 30% of the transactions conducted in their national currencies. The sweeping sanctions on Russia may push China to speed up measures to break with the U.S. currency and create its own means of payment. The obvious option is the yuan, which is getting stronger than ever. In July, international trade in the Chinese currency set a new record, with many predicting that at this rate, the yuan will become the world's third strongest currency by 2030.
Beijing has been actively encouraging the use of its currency in trade transactions, especially under its massive Belt and Road Initiative, with China recovering more strongly than other big nations after the COVID crisis that we've had. Foreign capital has been flooding in too as Beijing opens its financial markets.
This means only one thing. Given the economic alliance between China and Russia, the sanctions might temporarily hurt Moscow, but in the long run, the West will be disarmed of its economic pressure tool.
Iran and the International Atomic Energy Agency have issued a joint statement following a trip to the agency's by the agency's director general to Tehran, in line with a resolve to expand cooperation. The two sides have agreed on the following.
The Atomic Energy Organization of Iran will provide to the IAEA no later than the 20th of March 2022 written explanations, including related supporting documents, to the questions raised by the IAEA which have not been addressed by Iran on the issues related to three locations. Within 2 weeks after receiving the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran's written explanations and related supporting documents, the IAEA will review this information and will submit to the AEOI any questions on received information. Within 1 week after the IAEA has submitted to the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran any questions on such information, the IAEA and the AEOI will meet in Tehran to address the questions. Separate meetings will be held for each location. Upon completion of the activities set out in the paragraphs 1 to 3 above and following the correspondent evaluation by the agency, the Director General will aim to report his conclusion by the June 2022 Board of Governors.
And with that, we come to the end of this broadcast.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part of the program, we followed Javad, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the south of Iran and saw the most amazing combination nature could match together, the desert and the sea. We also met the region's native inhabitants and got acquainted with their unique lifestyle. Stay with us as Javad travels to other villages of the region to discover the culture and customs of the people.
In the past, the staple grains for all of Iran came from Sistan and Baluchistan. But what for severe drought spells and misguided planning over the years, the province has completely lost that status. But today, in some areas of this province, and in the Bahu Kalat district in particular, all kinds of vegetables and tropical fruits are cultivated. There is a mango tree that's in full bloom, exploding with blossoms. In about 5 months, they will turn into delicious, juicy mangoes. This is heaven indeed. Walking around in the palm groves and other gardens in Bahu Kalad gives me a lot of peace. One of the most beautiful things I come across during my stroll is the Baluchi squirrel. The Baluchi squirrel, also known as the stripy or palm squirrel, is a unique species of rodents living in parts of Iran, Pakistan, India, Nepal, and Bangladesh. The most distinctive feature of this mammal is the dark stripes on a white background on its back. In the past, the inhabitants of Sistan and Baluchistan believed these stripes were the fingerprints of the gods. A typical Baluchi squirrel is between 13 and 15 centimeters from its head to the end of its rump, and its tail adds an additional 14 to 19 centimeters to its total length. It's quite refreshing to see Baluchi children playing and gallivanting around in the banana groves. Beautiful, pure souls, the product of their serene, peaceful surroundings. Children of Shir Gwaz spend the whole week waiting to go to the fruit groves near the village to expend some of their inexhaustible energy. What they also do is they cook their traditional food on their own, and just like their elders, they gather around, sing, and play.
I don't know.
The kids here have distinctive, innocent faces. They are just gorgeous. And they're all wearing their traditional costumes, boys and girls alike, all wearing traditional clothes. They are among the oldest, most original tribes in Iran. They're very noble and very patient. They are a people with a lot of patience. And although some of them don't have good living conditions, they are very patient folks. They're so content. The Baluchi culture is the perfect example of a culture of nobility and peace. And those cultural traits are readily visible in the architecture of the old houses in this village. The architectural design is endemic to Baluchistan. You can't see anything like this anywhere else in Iran. There are also new houses in these areas with designs influenced by Indian and Pakistani cultures and architectures. One of the characteristics of Baluch families is their large populations. Wherever in the village I go, I'm surrounded by many of the little angels offering a breath of fresh air after a long day of hard work. They fill my heart with peace and joy. Perhaps one of the reasons these kids are so happy is their beautiful, tranquil, natural environs. Just as influential is the beautiful, happy colors used in the clothes that these little girls have on. Clothes that are embroidered by the artistic hands of their mothers. Hand embroidery on colorful clothes and fabric is among the most important crafts of Baluchi women. And fortunately, Baluchi women have been able to preserve this exquisite art, a skill handed down through generations. It's noontime. It can get really hot in Shirguaz, even in the middle of winter. But the boys of the village have a good solution to fighting the scorching heat. What they do at a time like this is jump into the waters of Shirguaz River and swim to their heart's content. These children usually play together in groups. The day offers an opportunity for me to make a return to the beautiful carefree days of my own childhood. Live life as an uninhibited, unabashed explorer of the unknown. Playing with these children serves as an outlet for the negative energy in me. Although the children in Shirguaz don't have much to entertain themselves with, they're all growing up happy, healthy, and strong by playing in groups and making the best of what their natural environment provides them with. No computers to spend the whole day on, playing virtual computer games that don't involve any physical activity, video games that have taken the place of playing outside for many kids today, outdoor experiences in nature, and plenty of physical activity that a growing body craves. These children's only toy is nature, going up trees, diving into the river and swimming, playing with animals, singing songs and helping their parents at home and on the farm, frolicking around and playing with stones and pebbles. This non-stop joyful mobility is the reason behind these children's physical health and happy disposition. Very soon, I leave the village and set out for my next destination. I have to travel 250 kilometers to the west of Balochistan, to a place 80 kilometers north of the city of Nikshar, a name that reminds me of my country's beautiful north. Given its unique geographical location, Balochistan has a diverse and strange climate. Some parts of this area is affected by the tropical climate of India, in the south by the Sea of Oman, in the west by the Jaz-Murian Inland Basin, and in the north by Lut Desert. Surrounded by these different climatic conditions, Balochistan features diverse lifestyles and various plant and animal species. Balochistan is a dry, water-thirsty land. The average annual rainfall in the province is around 110 millimeters. But the important thing is, all that water comes down in only a couple of torrential rainfalls that cause the rivers in the province to overflow their banks. The ensuing flooding leaves behind a trail of destruction every time. The people here tell me they get snow and blizzards in some winters, too, because of the mountains in the Gorgan area. Perhaps you'll find it interesting to know there is a place named Gorgan in Sistan and Balochistan province. But no, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the city of Gorgan in the north of Iran. This area is comprised of around 11 villages punctuating this mountainous area. It can get freezing cold here. The people of Balochistan say, except for Mount Taftan and Mount Basman, the only other place where you can see snow in the highlands is the same Gorgan region in Balochistan. It can get really cold here. Because of the altitude and the relatively good rainfall here, this valley usually has a good amount of water. And abundant water means life and prosperity. The people of Gorgan are either farmers or orchard owners or livestock keepers. The most important thing for them to be able to do any of those things is to have clean drinking water. The people of the first village I visit are very kind and hospitable. In my conversations with them, I realize all the young people in the village are busy working simply because there is enough water. Everyone has something to do. They're all grateful to God for all their blessings. Their biggest asset is contentment. I could say most of the things I've seen in this village were built from scratch by the men and women living here. They're all content with what they have. They even have electricity. They live a beautiful, simple, and healthy life, away from the hustle and bustle of city life and excesses that distract human beings from their true self and from nature. The Baluch community leads a simple lifestyle in their simple homes in Balochistan. They don't even expect a paved road. The peace that these lovely people exude is a breath of fresh air against the vicissitudes of city life. I am so at peace when I am in their fold. Before long, I resume my journey and arrive in the village of Archanik, a bucolic settlement second to none. But it isn't the architecture and natural environment that lends Archanik its beauty. The most beautiful thing I come across is the hospitality of the local inhabitants. Archanikis are hard-working, hospitable people. Moments after I reach the village, one of the elders comes to welcome me and invite me to his beautiful house. And the family gives me the red carpet treatment. Personally, I have a lot of respect for the culture and customs of this lovely ancient tribe and have tried my best not to have a negative impact on the culture or any of the good social norms of this community. Instead, I learned from them things that I had no idea about before I met them. I have had many trips to foreign exotic places in Iran. And on those trips, I saw many and varied village houses and nomad tents. But nothing like the teeps in the Gorgan region. beautiful, modest homes that offer peace and tranquility, just like their natural surroundings. Village elder Pir Muhammad fills me in on how they build their houses. My trip is nearing its end. That means I have to leave the beautiful Sistan and Baluchistan province and head back home. I leave with a bag of experience and memories as sweet as the dates of Gorgon. And I do so knowing that I haven't done any harm to the natural environment and the culture of this ancient tribe.
I'm quite sure that this week's documentary about Iran's natural wonders intrigued all our audience across the globe, and I hope it inspires you to come and explore the hidden treasures of Iran. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us, and until next week, goodbye. Thank you.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. This is The Lantern, and thank you very much for joining us on this brand new episode of the show, coming to you not live from the studios of IRIB English Radio. As human beings, or as creatures who a great aspect of their existence is material and pertains to a world that can only be perceived through the physical senses, we are very much obsessed with our appearance. Let's listen to a short story. And I love the story, especially because it involves puppies. But let's listen to it, and maybe we'll get a better idea of what we're trying to discuss here. And we'll be right back.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, dear friend, salam. So welcome to this episode of Lantern. Today we have a new story. Let's see what's our story for today. Puppies for sale. A sign above a shop read, "Puppies for sale." Signs like these have a way of grabbing the attention of the children. A small boy, upon seeing the sign, entered into the shop asking, "How much are you selling the puppies for?" The store owner said, anywhere from $30 to $50. The little boy removed all the money he had from his pocket. "See, I have $2.37," he said. "Can I please look at them?" The shop owner smiled and whistled. From the kennel, 5 cute puppies ran out. One puppy was lagging considerably behind. Pointing at the dog, the little boy asked, "What is wrong with that one?" The shopkeeper explained, "The hip socket of the puppy is missing. At least, that is what the veterinarian said. It will never walk properly again." The little boy cheered with excitement. "That is the puppy that I want to buy." "You don't have to buy that dog. You can have it for free." The little boy was upset. He looked up at the shop owner and said, "I don't want you to give him to me. That dog is of equal worth as the rest of the dogs. I'll give you $2.37 now and 50 cents a month until I have him fully paid for." The shopkeeper replied, "Are you sure you want this dog? It is never going to walk, run, or play with you." The little boy lifted one side of his pants up, exposing his crippled legs supported on a big metal brace. He looked up at the shop owner and softly replied, "Well, I don't run so well myself, and the little puppy will need someone who understands. There is no greater disability in society than the inability to see a person as more." There was an interesting quote by Robert M. Hensel, and that is a good ending for today's episode. I invite you to listen to the continuation of this program, Lantern, from IRIB English Radio.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
All right, so maybe this was too philosophical of a spin on or an interpretation of a very lighthearted, simple, Hallmark chicken soup for the soul sort of story, but it's good to have an analytic, critical view of everything that comes our way, because it helps us find deeper meaning to every situation. Isn't there a hadith that I have never seen anything except that I have seen God before it, after it, and within it? Or when Imam Ali alayhi salam was asked, "How do you worship a God that you can't even see?" He said, "What are you talking about? I see God everywhere, in everything, in everyone." Are we not all Khalifatullah? Or even if we're not talking about human beings, is everything not a reflection, a manifestation of Allah's power, of Allah's grace, of Allah's mercy, of Allah's creativity? And I feel, I personally found that once I, or during the scarce moments where I had a sprint of spirituality and was able to view the world like that, my surroundings, the world, the universe, people, things became so much more significant, and life became so much more meaningful and wholesome and abundant and rich, rather than just viewing things as objects and things and beings. Once I was able to view a flower or a plant or an insect as something that, well, I can't say that Allah spent time on it because He's not bound to time or space, but imagine if He were, like figuratively speaking, something that God spent time on creating. He spent His will on creating, rather. then you'll find that everything is so significant. Every bug, every insect, every animal, every tree, every flower, every person. And once that happens, you will no longer give yourself the right to mistreat or even neglect something, let alone oppress it. Because you feel, well, God created me and God created it. What makes me think I'm better? Now, I don't want to blur the lines and drift toward the trending mentality, ideology that's been happening the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I think especially vegans. There's nothing wrong with being a vegan, really. If it's your life choice, it's your life choice. I'm not here to judge or lecture or advise anyone. But the thought that, oh, but what made your life more precious than that lamb's or that goat or that cow or that pig or that whatever? Well, there are a lot of things that made my life more valuable than that of an animal. But that doesn't give me the right. But because I'm a valuable creature, and because I was created in Allah's image, and because he blew a part of his own soul, his essence, into me, and I possess such a high degree of intelligence and spiritual potential, because there's no limit to my growth, that I cannot allow myself to oppress other creatures because they're not me, or belittle them because they are different. And that definitely applies to other races, other cultures, other skin colors, other tongues, or even people of my own race, but with disabilities. You never know how much of God resides in them. You honestly never do. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ana bi dhikrillahi tatma'innu al-qulub.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.